among the tzaddikim buried here in this Warsaw cemetery. They have a long list. They have two Amshinov Rebbes, two Bialdei Rebbes, a Vorka Rebbe, Mozhitsa Rebbe, Novominsky Rebbe, Sokolov Rebbe, one of the Slonim Rebbes, Pilove Rebbe, Sokhachov Rebbe, Radomsky Rebbe, Shlem Radomsky, Radziman, one of the Kotzke Rebbes, who's the next one? Then they have the children of the Gera Rebbe, and the brothers of the Gera Rebbe, who are buried here. The son-in-law, few sons-in-law of the Svasemis, the Gera Rebbe. In the yeshivas, it's famous that the Nitziv and Rab Chaim Soloveitchik are both buried here. Rab Chaim Soloveitchik lived in Brisk, but at the, because of the First World War, he moved to Warsaw and he died here. He died here, and then Nitziv also lived in Volozhin, but because of the war, he moved here. All of these tzaddikim are buried here. People go to be mispal on their kvarim. Yeah. We didn't miss any opportunity. You can daven on the outside. You're not supposed to daven within Dalar Amnes of the Kever. You're supposed to daven on the outside of the Kever. You daven outside. At the end of the Second World War, one of the most prominent rabbonim who was killed by the Nazis in the Warsaw Ghetto was Hagoyen Rabbi Nachum Zembe. Yes. He was a Gera Chassid, and he married a girl whose father had a hardware store, and he wanted to support him. They were sitting and learning for years and years and years, and whenever anybody, he lived in Praga, that's on the other side of the river, in the outskirts of Warsaw. Regina said it's not to be confused with the city Prague, that's the capital of the Czech Republic. This is Prague, which is a suburb of, on the other side of the river of Warsaw.
In all Slavic languages, the city of Prague is also called Praga.
Yes. They're both in Slavic languages, they're both pronounced the same way, but in Yiddish we pronounce them differently. This is Prague and this is Praga. And Menachem Zema sat and learned, and he gave him shiur every day to Bochum who are interested in learning. But I don't think he had any official capacity the whole time. He was just sitting and learning, writing. He had cartons full of Chidush HaTorah. He printed very little during his lifetime. He printed when the son-in-law of the Or Sameach passed away. Rameir Simcha was the rabbi in Dvinsk. He had only one daughter, and that daughter was married to a businessman, Rabbi Avram Luftbeer, who was a very big Talmud Chacham. And the daughter died, and they had no children. Then the son-in-law died. He left no children. So his name was Avraham Luftbeer. So Menachem Zembe used to correspond with him, because the Or Sameach met Rabbi Or Sameach was older than Rabbi Menachem Zembe. He met him, he spoke to him in learning, so he told the son-in-law he should, he lived in a different city, so he said you should correspond with this man, because he knows how to learn so well. So they used to correspond. So when Rabbi Avraham Luftbeer passed away, so Menachem Zema put out a sefer, Zera Avraham. This should be a Bimkoim children, that he was never Zeche to have any children. So they have the correspondence back and forth. The letters of Menachem Zema are stronger than those of Rabbi Avraham Luftbeer. But he was a businessman. So he was very strong. Then Rabbi Menachem Zema lost a son. Also, I think he was engaged to get married. He was something like 20, 21 years old, also very strong and learning. He was learning out of town, so he used to correspond with his father. So after he passed away, so the father put out a sefer, his correspondence with his son. So also, the Rabbi Menachem Zembe's letters are much stronger than those of his son, but the son was only 20 years old. He knew all of Bavli, Yerushalmi, all the Rishonim. He didn't know all the Or Sameach, didn't know all the Svasemeses. Unbelievable for such a young person. He knew so much. I spoke about the son of the Rosh Yeshiva in Hebron. When half of Slabot Yeshiva moved there, it was to the city of Hebron. So the Rosh Yeshiva's son, I forgot which one it was. It wasn't Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein.
couldn't come to the Levaya right away.
Right, he came an hour late to the funeral of his own son, yeah. So then, Menachem Zemba, when the father-in-law passed away, so he had to do the work in the hardware store. So he was a businessman. He was a businessman. And there was a whole chevra, a whole group of unusual Talmidei Chachamim who were all businessmen. There was one who put out, one by the name Yoskovich, I forgot his first name, he put out a Sefer comments on the Sifrei Zuta. Who has this? The normal Sifrei, the Stam Sifrei is Reb Shimon. Stam Sifro is Reb Yudah, and Stam Sifrei is Reb Shimon. And it's all the Gemara says, Alibi Reb Akiva, the world Talmidim are Reb Akiva. So then there's a Sefer, from the days of the Tanaim, Sifrei Zuta, we call it. Rashi and Chumash calls it Sifrei Bipanim Acheres, a different version of the Sifrei, Amba Midbar. I don't think we have on Dvorim. So the Sifrei Zuta is in a different style Hebrew. It's written more in Aramaic style. And it sometimes has different shittas. So when it contradicts, we assume that it's in the basement Rosh Shal Rabbi Yishmael, the Sifrei Zuta. The Sifrei that we have is in the basement Rosh Shal Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara says. Stam Sifrei Reb Shimon Aliba de Reb Akiva. So whenever there's a contradiction between the Sifrei and the Sifrei Zuta, he passes like Reb Akiva against Reb Yishmael. Whenever there's no contradiction. So every so often the Rambam will quote a din, and the Raivet or Radha Meforshim will say, we don't know where in the world did he get this from. This din never appears in the Gemara. So the later Meforshim will say, it's in the Sifrei Zuta. There are a lot of dinim in the Rambam that don't appear any other source other than the Sifrei Zuta. So a good friend of Menachem Zemba, who is also a Polish businessman, put out a Sifrei Zuta, not a critical edition. He didn't work on the Girsois, but the Kisvayat, a text of the Sifrei Zuta, and he has footnotes, he has Haoris, half a page, and every page, half a page is Haoris. His Haoris are phenomenal. He tzeichens on, he gives you a marmokim, every Ursameach, and every Ragat Shovah, and every Babli Yerushalmi, every Mokker, that anybody ever heard of. So he sent his sefer to Rav Menachem Zemba before he printed it, and he asked them, this chevra of businessmen, we're all in touch with each other. So he asked, does he have any ha'oris to write? So he said, okay. So he sent them a kuntres, 100 pages. A kuntres that's called Oitzer HaSifrei, they call it. The Sifrei Zuta begins with a din that appears in Mishnayis Kalim and Perak Aleph. Some of the Nusach Svar Tzidurim have it from Friday night. It has the list of Esa Kedusha Sein. Has a list of, it says, Eretz Yisrael Mekudeshes Mekol Hara. It says there are 10 levels of Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael has Kedusha as opposed to Chutz Lord. And the cities that have walls around them, Ayoras Amakav, Eschaim, have a higher level Kedusha than the rest of Eretz Yisrael. And Yerushalayim is the third Madrega, has a higher level of Kedusha than the other Ayoras HaMekav Chayma. And Harabais has a higher level of Kedusha than the rest of Yerushalayim. And then the Rabbanon, we divide the Harabais into three sections, the Chila, and then the Ezras Noshim, the three sections on the level of the Raisa, the whole Harabais is one level of Kedusha. But the Rabbanon, they divide it into three. And then you have the Azoras Mamekudish, and then you have Ezras Kohanim is a further section, the Azora. Many of these differences are what we call milus the Rabbanon, the Chumras, but the Rabbanon that we say this is slightly higher level of Kedusha than the other one. And the Mishnah spells out the difference, la locha, between this level of Kedusha, that level of Kedusha, the third level, the fourth level. So the Mishnah says, Esa Kedusha Saints. So this Mishnah that appears in Kalim and Perek Aleph appears, that's the first piece in the Sifrei Zuta. Because in the beginning of Chumash Dvarim, you have the census is taken. Chumash Bamidbar, the census of Bnei Yisrael is taken. That's not a halacha. Then after the census, the first thing that appears is Shiluach Tameim min Amachne. V'shalcha min Amachne kol tzerov v'chol zav v'chol tomei lo nofesh. So the Sifrei Zuta has the same text, practically word for word, with slight shinuyim from the Mishnah. So Rav Menachem Zemba wrote a 100-page kuntres on the slight shinuyim, on the discrepancies between the way the Mishnah quotes it and the way the Sifrei Zuta quotes it. And everybody borrows, everybody quotes Some people quote B'Shem Amra, some people say Shalom B'Shem Amra. Everybody uses what Menachem Zemba says. So that's called the Oitzer HaSifrei. Then there was a Torah journal in Europe. The editor was Rav Menachem Mendel Kasha. He's the one who did a lot of work on the Torah Shleima. He did on Kisvei Yad a lot. He was a different style of learning. He wasn't so much into Psak Halach, he was more into research. So he was the editor of a Torah journal that was called Degelat Torah, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was Degelat Torah. So he had Rabbanim from all over Europe would participate, Chassidish Rebbes and Rabbi Chana Wasserman and Talmid Chachamim from America participated. They were all Europeans who had moved to America. They weren't American-born Talmid Chachamim then. So Menachem Zemba, he encouraged Menachem Zemba to participate, so he also did. So he sent in a series. If you put it all together, everything that he printed, that's called the Oitzer HaSifro. The Sifro, the Torah's Kahanim on Vayikra, begins with the Braiser Rebbe Shmuel Leimer, B'yud Gimel Minas HaTaran Adreshes for him. So he has a whole kuntres, a long, it's not 100 pages, it's less. He has a whole essay that when you put the whole essay together, it's called Oitzer HaSifro on the Midas HaTaran Adreshes, but it's also fantastic. He has fantastic things. And it's unfortunate, after the war, they were looking for the Kisvei Yad Rav Menachem Zemba. He had cartons full. He wrote and he wrote and he wrote. He had thousands of pages. Everything was destroyed. They couldn't find anything after the war. They had Rabbi Yosef Engel. Rabbi Yosef Engel was a Polish goyim. See, the Polish had a different style of learning. It was the old style, not Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the old style. But it was unique. It was all charifistic. It was very sharp. Svasemis is also Polish. Polish style. But Menachem Zemba was not the Polish style. He had everybody respected his style. He, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik met him. It was also taken by him. All the Litvish Rosh Yeshiva who met him, everybody was taken by Rav Menachem Zemba. He was unbelievable. There's also a famous sefer that they used in Yeshiva, Safike Yam. He was also a businessman. He was also a businessman most of his life. The end of his life, he was appointed a rabbi. The Chayyotim we mentioned was a businessman. He was in business, and he wrote the Chayyotim and the Chochmas Adam that were accepted in Lithuania, like the Bible. And then at the end of his lifetime, they appointed a Bandayan in Vilna. But we mentioned the other day, yesterday I think, Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius lived in Brod, and he was a businessman. He never was in a rabbinical position.
Broad
he
wrote, boss, right?
Huh?
He was a balabas
in Brod. And the rabbi in Brod at that time wrote a sefer on Chulin that used to be known as a classic Lev Aryeh on Chulin. Now nobody ever heard of it. Nobody looks at it now. There's so many other svarim on Chulin. But the rabbi was not at all as world famous as the balabas was. Balabas, Rabbi Ephraim Zalman Margolius, was more famous than all the rabbis. Yeah, they had the great, that many, by the time of the war, the Second World War, Warsaw was a city with Talmid Chachamim, Uflogim, so many different yeshivas, and Chassidish Rebbes, and Chassidish Yeshivas, and so on. It was Malei Chachamim and Soifrim. It was unbelievable. The first Gerer Rebbe was a Chidush Harim, and when he passed away, his grandson, when did he live? I'm not sure. I think the early and the middle 1800s. When he passed away, then his son had passed away earlier, and his grandson became, the Sfasemis became the second Gerer Rebbe. And then after he passed away, his son was the Imre Emes. He's the one who came to Eretz Yisrael. Now all the Gerer Rebbes are his children. Imre Emes, who came to Eretz Yisrael, had two wives. After the first wife died, then he married and had children from the second wife. So all of the last few Gerer Rebbes, I forgot what you call them already, so they're, what is called the Leib Sameach or something, the Leib Sameach. Forgot about the names.
Leib
Simcha. I think they were all children of the Gerer Rebbe. Some are children from the first wife, some are children from the second wife. So the Sfasemis was a very big Talmid Chacham. He changed a lot of things in Ger. When he became the Rebbe, when the Chiddush HaRim died, he became the Rebbe, he insisted that the Chassidim have to daven Shabbos morning at 7:30. Every day 7:30, Shabbos morning also 7:30. Under the Chiddush HaRim, they used to daven after the Zman Tefillah, after the Zman Kriyat Shema. So he changed it. So some of the old Chassidim were upset. What, he's more frum than his grandfather? He's making tikkunim. What's wrong with the old system? We should follow the tradition. So he said, this is what they quote in the Swami, he said, if the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted us to continue the old system, my grandfather would have remained alive. The fact that he passed away and they made me the Rebbe means that it's time for a change. He was very insistent. He was the one who insisted. He pushed for the organization of the Agudas Yisrael. And there were those, and through the Agudas Yisrael, people were making fun of him that he just wants to have shlita over all of European Jewry. He had, I think, thousands and thousands of Hasidim under his leadership. The Ger Hasidus grew tremendously. When he passed away, every day when he used to, after he daven Shacharis, he used to learn, and he would say comments. So I think the son-in-law wrote down there, the son-in-law, Bianca Moshe, I forgot his name, Biederman, is buried in the same cemetery over here, in this Warsaw cemetery. So after he passed away, so they had a shaila, whether they should print the ksavim, the Chiddush Torah that the Sfasem said, because every so often he said a svara and it's against the nafin of Taisus. Or sometimes he would have a sotek, he would say a din, and then you have comments from the son-in-law, Biederman, that Ganka Meir Biederman, I think his name was, that it's against the nafin of Mishnah. He would sometimes forget because he was learning Gemara quickly. I'm just saying off the top of his head. He didn't look up the other Gemaras. He just said comments on the top of his head. So apparently when he passed away, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik must have been in Warsaw at that time. So they write in the beginning of the first volume of the Sfasem Salashas, it's three volumes that they consulted Rav Chaim Soloveitchik whether they should publish the Ksavim or not. So Rav Chaim told him he thinks that even with the mistakes and with the Sveikas that he was not sure about, it's more worthy of printing than Svarim that other people wrote that where there are no mistakes and they are sure of what the din is. He insisted they should print it. And it's a fantastic, useful sefer. It's most of the two volumes are on, the first two volumes are on Moed, and the third volume is on Kochim. Everybody who learns Seder Kochim uses Svasemes. It's interesting, when you learn Zvachim and Menaches, when you learn Kochim, so we haven't been learning Kochim for so many years, we don't have traditions, hasn't been worked out. But you look on all the Svarim that you have, everybody says the same shot usually. The Chazon Ish and the Sfasemes and the Bris Kerov and the Keren Ira, usually they all say the same thing.
The question is, why this up when it comes to the Bris?
Start.
Rav Elbel Soloveitchik only gave shurim on Kochim. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, his older brother, gave shurim on everything else. I don't know, they said, the story goes, when Rav Chaim passed away, they divided all the ksavim. So he took the ksavim on Kochim, he took the ksavim on the other part of Shas. I don't know. That's probably above him, I said, but that's what people say. But Rav Moshe Soloveitchik gave shurim on normal things. From time to time, Rav Elbel Soloveitchik would quote his older brother, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, and he gave the shiur.
Roth gave a shiur once on Zvachim, when he came to visit when his father was still in Rosh
Hashiva.
He came to visit
When Rav Soloveitchik first came to America, they were mechabed him to give a shiur for the Agudas Harbonim in New York. Agudas Harbonim used to be a group of very learned rabbanim. They were not so involved in politics. They gave Ashgochas, but not involved in politics, but very involved in learning. So he was holding in the middle of Yuma. Yuma is all in Yonim of Kotchim, most of Yuma. Except for the last Perek, most of Yuma is all about Karbonis. Rabbi Soloveitchik felt he was an expert in Avodas Yom HaKippurim. He felt that if they build the Beis HaMikdash today, he'd be able to instruct the Kain Gadol how to do the Avodas Yom HaKippurim step by step. He felt that he knew Yuma very well. So he told them he'll give a shiur on Yuma. So his father, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, told them, got to be careful, there's one person over there who knows every Taisus Shishanim in Yuma. That was Rabbi Lezer Silva. Lezer Silva had learned by Rabbi Chaim Oizer, Rabbi Chaim Oizer's Kailo. There were other Rabbonim in America also. There was a Rabbi Natalovich, used to give Hashgachas. He lived in the New York area. He also had learned at Rabbi Chaim Oizer's Kailo. Rabbi Natalovich used to brag that the first Tshuva in Achiezer was written by him. The first Tshuva in Achiezer is about the a man died and he had no children, so his wife needs chalitza, but the wife had an affair with someone else while she was married to the first husband. So that's a question in din, whether she really needs any chalitza or not. So Chaim Moshe has a whole tshuva. I forgot already what the maskana is, but it's clearly a dispute in the Rishonim on the Gemara. So Rabbi Natalovich claims that Chaim Moshe asked him to write that tshuva. People buried here is Sachat Shavu Rebbe, not Rebbe Avrema the Sachat Shavu, not the Yavnei Nezer, the first one, but his son. Son is buried here. The father, the Yavnei Nezer, the one who wrote the Joas Yavnei Nezer, was a super genius. They describe some of the people who survived the war wrote descriptions of his shir. He used to give a daily shir. And he had the biggest charifim, the biggest, sharpest learners in Poland. And they were big bekiim. They knew a lot of Gemara. They would give a shir. They would daven shachris every morning, and they would have breakfast. Then he would start to shir whatever at 9 o'clock, 9:30. He would give a shir for 6 hours. And he would start learning the Gemara, and he would say what his ideas are. And someone would start shooting a kasha from one Gemara, and he would work out an answer. Someone else would shoot a kasha from another Gemara. He would work out only at this. Would go on for 6 hours straight, every day. And each one was sharper than the other. He had the sharpest minds. He was a, Avnei Nezer was a super genius. He had Talmidim who learned by him, learned by the Avnei Nezer. But it wasn't shy. He can't pick up genius from someone else. If someone has a style of learning, so you can pick up the Derech Halima. But if a person is a genius, either you are or you're not. So those who learned by the Avnei Nezer, you read their svarim, you can tell it's imitation genius. It's not the real McCoy at all. There are a few Talmidim out here, so put out svarim, not at all the same. One of the tzaddikim who was killed in the Warsaw Ghetto by the end was the Kozhik Lover. The Kozhik Lover, what was his name? Arbaye Tzvi Frommer, I think. In Yeshiva University, the brother of this Kozhik Lover Goyen made a major donation to Yeshiva, so they have the second floor in the Gottesman Library, the floor that's called 5A, is dedicated in memory of the Kozhik Lover by his brother. And they have a picture of the Kozhik Lover. I don't know if he was so keen about studying secular studies. I doubt it. But he was a Robin Kozhik Lover before the First World War. And then I think in the First World War, there was no more Kozhik Lover. I think the whole city was destroyed. So years later, when after the war, when Rav Meir Shapira founded the Lublini Yeshiva in Lublin, he invited this Goyen to give the top shir in the yeshiva. He was there for many years, and then he was killed by the Nazis. This Kozhik Lover, Rabbi Tzvi Frommer, had learned by the Avnei Nezer, and he quotes him all the time. He quotes Machlekes between the Sachat Shaver Rebbe and the Chechan Aver Rebbe. He quotes all the Rebbes. He quotes everything that he heard. So he has tshuvas. It's called Eretz Tzvi because the name is Aryeh Tzvi, but it's imitation of Avnei. You can see it's not the same. He was a genius also, but he wasn't like the Avnei Nezer. Was a super genius. Then the Avnei Nezer had another Talmud who was a Dayan in Warsaw. I forgot his name already. He wrote a sefer on Becheiris, also imitation genius. It's not, you can tell it's not the same thing. Not at all the same thing. You can't imitate a genius. There is a Sachat Shaveh Rebbe in Beit Hagan now, who was, I think, a grandson of the Shemesh Shmuel, if I'm not mistaken. Shemesh Shmuel was Sachat Shaveh Rebbe in Europe. So I remember he once visited America. He came for someone's wedding. Could be he comes more often. I don't know. He once came. I don't know why. He came to YU. So he walked into the Beis Medrash. That week we were discussing a difficult idea that the Avnei Nezer, the first Sachat Shaveh Rebbe, had. The Avnei Nezer writes a very big chiddush. The din is if you buy pots and pans or silverware from a nochri, so you have to be toivel in a mikveh before you use it. And the Rishonim say it's a form of gerus, just like we're not permitted to intermarry. And if one wants to marry a nochri, you have to be megayer first. So too, you're not supposed to use kelim, clay suda. The Gemara says to buy a suit from a nochri, there's no need for tefilas begodim. But if you buy kelim that you use for eating food, forks and knives and spoons and plates and so on, if they're made from metal or made from glass, then you have to have tefillas kelim. If the paper cups are wooden spoons, you don't need tefillas kelim. But if it's made from metal or made from glass, then the Gemara seems to say that made from glass is only with the rabban, and you have to do tefillas kelim. So the shaila is, what if a nochri was planning to convert and he started keeping kosher? So he buys new pots and pans, new forks and knives. He makes sure that everything is kosher. He doesn't have any nevelis or treifas, doesn't have any basa v'cholav, everything is kosher. And then he converts. Does he also have to have tefilas kelim on the pots and pans that he was using, because it used to belong to a nochri, that's himself, now it belongs to a Jew, that's himself? Do you need tefilas kelim? So you can say that it's only if it's from one person to the other, because of the institution of Tefillas Kelim was learned out of Chumash at the end of Chumash Bamidbar, from the Melchemes Midyan, after the war with the Midyanim. So Bnei Yisrael took over all the pots and pans. So the pots and pans were Tomei, so they had to remove the Tumah. And then also the pots and pans that they used for cooking had to have a Tefillas Kelim. So it's the Pasuk is talking about a situation where the pots used to belong to one person, now belongs to a different person, but it belongs to the same person, maybe the din doesn't apply. So that's what the Shemesh Shmuel quotes in the name of his father, the Avnei Nezer. There's no need for tefillas kelim. And he quotes a Mishnah in the end of Beitzah, which has nothing to do with this at all. Mishnah says in the end of Beitzah that just like there's a din of tchumen for a person on Shabbos and Yantar, one is not permitted to go chutz l'tchum. So too, you're not allowed to take someone's kelim chutz l'tchum of the owner. Let's say I made an erev tchumen and I can go in one direction, not the other. I can go in this area. And you didn't make an erev tchumen over there. I'm going to lend you my fork and my knife. I'll lend you my sefer. You want to go in a different direction. That's toch tchum of where you're allowed to go, but it's chutz l'tchum of the owner of the sefer. Well, let's say I stay in someone's home on Yontif. This comes up more often. someone goes away to Eretz Yisrael for Yontif, and they leave all of their Sfarim at home. And then they allow me, to give me permission to use their apartment. I'm in the apartment, so they say, you can use whatever you want. So I want to take a sefer to shul. So the din is, since the owner of the sefer is in Yerushalayim, he's visiting Eretz Yisrael, for Yontif, so all of his property has his trum, so his Sfarim achutz l'trum, because he's in Eretz Yisrael, and their trum is also wherever, whatever his trum is. That's the Loshon of the Mishnah, Behema v'Hakelim, Kirag le'Habaylim has the same trum as the owner. So since his Sfarim achutz l'trum, up where they're supposed to be, so you're not allowed to take it chutz l'dalanama. So to carry it anywhere around the house is mutter. If there's an Arab in the community, so if there's an Arab, the whole community is kedalaramas dami. But to take it chutzla, to carry it to shul in the street chutzla Arab, it would be permissible on Yontif to carry a sefer that you want to use. But since it's the kelim a chutzla trum, the svarim a chutzla trum, you're not allowed to take him outside of the house. So that's the melitza. That's the expression that the Mishnah has. Abeimah b'kelim kirak lehabaylim has the same trum as the owner. So the Shem Shmuel is a collection of drushes by the Sachet Shavir Rebbe on Chumash, on Yamim Taifim. So he quotes this Chiddush from the Avnei Nezer, first Sachet Shavir Rebbe, that since the Mishnah has the Loshon Habeim V'Akelim Kirak Me'Abaylim, so therefore, if the Nochri owned pots and pans before he was Nizgayer, then he was tovel in the mikveh, so that his going to the mikveh is oila, counts for his kelim as well. Because the Mishnah says, habehev ha-kelim, kirag le-habaylim. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. I don't know what in the world it's supposed to mean. And there used to be a dayan in London, dayan Grosnas, labeled Grosnas, but learned by Chofetz Chaim, and he learned he was a yeke. He went from Germany to learn in Radin, and he learned by Rav Baruch Ber in Kamenitz. He has a collection of tshuvas called Shadash Shuvas Lev Aryeh and Stu Chalokim. So he quotes this from the Shem Mishmol. This is a common shayla. A ger converts, does he have to be Tevil Hiskel? So he quotes the Shem Mishmol with this strange source, Abeim Vakelim Kirak Levayim. And he says he doesn't really understand what it means. So out of respect for the Sach Chavar Rebbe, we shouldn't say a bracha, but he thinks we should be Tevil Hakelim. We should be Tevil, but since the Sach Chavar Rebbe said not, so we don't tell them this. I think he's younger than me, this Sachet Shavir Rebbe in Beit Vegan was in YU. So I walked over to him and I said, he came over to me. He struck up a whole conversation. So I asked him, what does that mean? So he says, well, it's a Beferish Mishnah. But the Mishnah is not talking about Tfilas Ken. The Mishnah is talking about Tchumen. Usually the Shem Shmuel is very clear. He usually explains himself very, very well. In Warsaw, they had so many Goyim in Gedolim. It's unbelievable. In the late 1800s, one of the prominent Dayanim by the name of Flatfish, I forgot his first name, was one of the three signatories on the Et HaMechira. The Mechira was not for the Shnas HaShemitah, that when you sell a karka to a Nochri, the laws of Shemitah don't apply. It was not organized by the Mizrahi. It was by Gedolei Olam. Rabbi Shua the Kutna had nothing to do with the Mizrahi. He was a Goyin HaGoyer. And this dying Klepfish also, and Shmuel Malavar was also a big Tamachach. Then Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan signed on when he saw that the Svadish of Poskim from the 1600s were the ones who came up with this end. Chaim. His parents were real Litvaks. The in such a name, Rabbi Yochanan Meisner. They say in the history books, they write that at the age of 9, he went to learn a Valojin. At the age of 13, they already gave him a smicha. From the time that he learned in Valojin, he was very close to the Beis HaLevi, and the Reb Chaim also, kind of the son of the Beis HaLevi. And the Beis HaLevi and... Beis HaLevi, Rabbi Yochanan Meisner, originally were very supportive of the Zionist movement. It's a mitzvah to establish a Medina in Eretz Yisrael. But then, when they saw that the whole movement was anti-religious, not Stam Chiloni, anti-religious, so they broke off their contacts. Beis HaLevi discontinued his subscription to their newsletter. And a group of Rabbanim signed a Kol Koirei, along with Rav Chaim Soloveitchik and Rav David and Carlina. They all signed a Kol Koirei against these anti-religious Zionists. The author of the Torah Tmeima, in his autobiography, tells all kinds of stories. And this is one of the more famous stories that he has, that that when the Zionists were moving to Eretz Yisrael and they passed through the city Brist, so they confronted the Beis HaLevi and they asked him, why did he stop his subscription to their newsletter? So he said, because he gave up on the Zionist movement, they're anti-religious. And they said, well, it's so hard to be religious in this generation. The rabbis added on so many chumras. How can you survive with all these chumras? So Beis HaLevi told him, I'll be happy to give you a few kulas. So he gave him a whole list, I think 10 kulas. So what, I forgot already all the kulas. One of the kulas was that in Shulchan Aruch it says you're not permitted to learn an Erev Tisha B'Av after Chatzos. And that's problematic. The Mishnah Berurah quotes a long bir halacha, that's problematic. Why you're not allowed to learn? So the Beis HaLevi said, I'll be mekel for you. You're permitted to learn an Erev Tisha B'Av after Chatzos. He had such a list of 10 different kulas that Rav Baruch Epstein has in his autobiography. But this Rav Eli Chaim Meisel was the one who asked the Shaila of the Beis HaLevi, Shaila in Dinei Saita, that there was a certain Talmid Chacham whom he didn't like, probably because it wasn't the Balmidus. So he said, if that person comes to our home, if I'm not home, so don't let him in the house. I don't like him. So he was away. Rabbi Chaim was away, he was taking care of things in the city, and that Talmid Chacham came to their home. The wife said, my husband is not home, but she invited the person to come in, she gave him a cup of tea and some cake, and he left, and the wife was not in violation of Yichud, because Baila Bo'ir, if the husband is in town, so there's no issue of Yichud. There was nobody else in the house, only Mrs. Meisel, and this Talmid Chacham, and then the Talmid Chacham left. So the rabbi that had a shaila, maybe the wife is Asura al Baila, because there was kinui astira. The husband said she shouldn't let so-and-so into the house, and she admits herself that she let him into the house, and he believes his wife. So true, this wouldn't be enough to have a drink, the Maim HaMorim and the Beis HaMikdash, because you have to have two Eidim, or I said they're different opinions. So we pass him that you need two Eidim for the kinui and two Eidim for the astira. Kina means when he warns his wife not to be alone with somebody. So the shaila was, the need for the two Eidim for the Kinyas there, is that considered Eidus Lakim Adover, or is that Eidus Labira Adover? It's Eidus Lakim Adover, so there was nobody around when the husband said, don't let Pliny into the house. But if it's Eidus Labira Adover, and the wife admits on her own that she let the person in the house, so then, and the husband believes his wife, then she should be Asura Abayla. So the Beis HaLevi has a tshuva to him. They were friendly from the time that Rabbi Eli Chaim learned in Valojin. And Beis HaLevi was there also. He has a whole tshuva to him. And he has a big chiddush. And he thinks that the two Eidim that are needed for the kinui are the Kiyam HaDover, and two Eidim that are needed for the stira, the Bir HaDover, has this fantastic chiddush. And he has a Yerushalmi to support it. Fine. But then in the last paragraph is the punchline. So he writes, but here there was no kinui. When a husband is not choshen his wife, that she's not being faithful, he just says, I don't like this rabbi. He's arrogant, or he's aritz, whatever. I don't like him. I don't like him. And if he comes to town, don't let him in the house. but he's not doubting his wife's trustworthiness. He doesn't think his wife is doing anything wrong. That's not called a kino. That's what he writes in the last paragraph. But he published the whole tshuva, the Beis Halevi published the whole tshuva. That was the tshuva to Rabbi Chaim Meisel, because his chiddush, that the need for the two eidim by the kino is different from the need by the stira. By the kino, it's the kiyum adover. By the stira, it's the bir adover. They say Rabbi Chaim Meisel, when he became the Rav in Lodz, he had a shaila. The Sefer Torah was written. The Sefer Torah was written with Ksav Ari, as opposed to Ksav Beis Yosef. Usually the Hasidim like to use Ksav Ari, and the Misnagdim use Ksav Beis Yosef. Rabbi Yechaim was a Misnagdim, he learned the Vavoshan. And he was Mesupik that some of the letters are not slightly different, mainly the Tzadik. The Tzadik is very different. In the Ksav Ari, the two heads on top of the Tzadik are facing opposite directions. They're like two heads, and each one has a neck coming out from the body of the tzaddik. The two heads are facing the two opposite directions. And the Ksav Beis Yosef, two heads of the tzaddik on top are facing the same direction. And the Zohar, in the Sefer HaZohar, there's a contradiction between two different places as to which direction the heads of the tzaddik should be. The head of the tzaddik is supposed to represent, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam and Chava together, they were created two patsufim. The male and the female bodies were connected, and then Hashem separated them from each other. So the question is, when they were connected, were they facing two opposite directions, or were they facing the same direction? So this is a contradiction in the Zohar. So the Ksav Beis Yosef assumes that both were facing the same direction. The Ksav Ari follows that passage in the Zohar, that they were facing opposite directions. But it's a major shinui. The tzaddik in this shape is slightly different from the tzaddik in that shape. So Rabbi Yechaim was correcting all the Sefer Torah. He had a sefer go through the Sefer Torah to change every single tzaddik. So Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, who was younger than him, contacted him. He said he thinks that even if it's written incorrectly, but everybody knows it, that's what the tzaddik looks like. So he didn't think you have to be so meticulous about the shape of the tzaddik. It's good even if it's not the way it should have been. L'chatchila. L'chatchila shitaka v'yatzadik. Both heads facing the same direction. See, the Mishnah Berurah has long, detailed arichas on all the tzuras ha'isiyas. Aleph, base, every letter from the alphabet, what it's supposed to look like, and if it's slightly off, this way it'll be pasul, that way it'll be kosher. So Rabbi Chaim wasn't so convinced about that. He thought a tzaddik is a tzaddik. It shouldn't make such a big difference. That was Rabbi Chaim. He was makbid. He commissioned a sefer to change all the tzaddiks in the Sefer Torah. They quote from the Chazanish. Chazanish thought that you shouldn't wear tefillin at Ksav Ari, because according to the Mistagdusha tradition, it could be that it's makbid yevet, could be it's possible. So all the Hasidim got all touchy about that. So he said, "What do you mean? Possible?" So he said, "No, maybe it is kosher." He's not sure, but maybe it's possible. He said, "Maybe it's possible." He wasn't so sure. So they asked him, "But in Europe, it's a W Yadua." He said this in Eretz Yisrael. So they asked him, "But in Europe, it's a W Yadua that many Hasidish Kehilas had Sefer Torah that were written in Ksav Ari, and the Mesnagdim of the Rabbanim would take Aliyas, and they weren't concerned that it may be a Brocha Levanto." So the Chazanish said, "Well, that's a different reason why. Because in Sefer Torah, there's a big dispute. It happens to be a machlokes, the Rambam and the Rambam. The Rambam originally wrote a tshuva that you can link Kriyas HaTorah with brachas even from a pasul of Sefer Torah. And later in life, the Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah, and there he writes that you need a kosher Sefer Torah for the purpose of Kriyas HaTorah. So the Kesa Mishnah, in his commentary on the side of the Rambam, quotes the tshuva of Rashba, who points out this contradiction. That earlier in life, the Rambam thought that there's no need for a kosher Sefer Torah for Kriyas HaTorah. You need a kosher Sefer Torah to fulfill the mitzvah Ksiva Sefer Torah. But you don't need for the purpose of Kriyas HaTorah. And the Rambam writes that in all Orei Svarad, he knows that it was the common practice that would learn from Pasul HaSvarad, from Pasul HaSefer Torah. During the Second World War, there were many conservative chaplains in the American army who followed that Shuvas HaRambam. That there's nothing wrong. The Rambam says he can learn from Apostle to say Vatari, he can say Brachas. But we don't follow the Rambam in the Shuvah. We follow the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, who changed his mind. Apparently, that's what the Rashba writes in the Shuvah, that for the purpose of Kriyas HaTorah, you have to have a kosher to say Vatari. So that's what the Chazon Ish answered. When it comes to Kriyas HaTorah, there's more room to be made. Maybe the tzaddik is kosher, even if it's written incorrectly. Even if it's possible, maybe the din is like the Tshuvas HaRambam, that you may learn from a possible Sefer Torah. But the Eved, we rely on that Rambam in the Tshuva. Let's say if Al-Kori learned half the Sedra, then we find that Revi and Hamishi and Shishi find that there's a mistake. So we put away the mistake and Sefer Torah, we take out a new one. And we're Mako, we only learn from there till the end. We don't learn over everything. That's the way it says in Shulchan Aruch. It's a Midas Chasidus to learn over everything. But if the rabbi is afraid the Balabatim will fire him, well, they'll be very upset. It's going to take another 40 minutes. So then you follow what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch it says that whatever you learn by the Eved from the Pasul of Sefer Torah, by the Eved we rely on the Tshuvas HaRambam. That it's acceptable to learn Kriyas HaTorah from a Pasul of Sefer Torah. That's what the Chazon Ish said. But the fact that the Rabbanim, the Misnagdish Rabbanim, would take aliyahs and Chassidish communities, but it had Sefer Torah that were written in Savari, doesn't prove that it's good for Tefillin. Because in Tefillin, no one says that you can have Pasul of Tefillin. But Kriyas HaTorah, that's the Tshuvas HaRambam, says you can learn Kriyas HaTorah from a Pasul of Sefer Torah. You only need a kosher Sefer Torah for the purpose of fulfilling the mitzvah Ksiva Sefer Torah, but not for Kriyas HaTorah. So that was Rabbi Yochai Meisel, was known for that. He insisted that they should correct the Sefer Torah. All the tzaddiks, they should change everything over to convert all the chassidish tzaddikim to become misnagdish tzaddikim. His grandson, Balakham's grandson, also with the name Meisel, but as a Yitzhak Meisel, was the Rabban Lodz. And then, when it's soon before the Shoah, he went to the ghetto in Warsaw, and he was killed with everybody else. He was there, they all had the Seder together. The last, the uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto, I think, was on Pesach.
Yeah, it was April.
April, it was on Pesach, I think. So they were all together. They all had to say that together in his home, from Menachem Zemba with all the others. They all had together. In fact, it's interesting, I mentioned a couple of days ago that it was the 50th Yahrzeit of Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg. So this interview that they had with this fellow from Switzerland who now lives in Eretz Yisrael, who was raised like a son by the Sridi Yesh. He didn't have any children of his own. After the war, this Weingart's father, who was a Talmud of the Sridi Yesh in Berlin, in Hildesheim Seminary, heard that his Rebbe was not well. He had a nervous breakdown, but he heard the whole world was destroyed. He wasn't following all the years of the war. He was held in a different location, so that they didn't hear any reports of anything. So his father took him to Switzerland and tried to take care of him, and then the father died. So he was like a father for this Weingart family. So this whole interview that they had a couple of months ago was all about Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg. So one of the things that he said was that before that last Pesach in the Warsaw Ghetto, they had a Hebrew printing press in Warsaw, in part of the ghetto. So they decided they're going to print the Sefer of Chiddush HaTorah in the middle of the ghetto, when everybody is half dead. People are dying from starvation, from disease and everything. So they all made up that they're going to write the Divrei Torah on one Rambam. Some Rambam in Hilchos Pesach, I forgot if it was something in Hilchos Chametz and Matzah, I think Mitzvah Bav Avera. Matzah Shatevel, I'm not sure. I think that's what they were all going to write on that Rambam. And they had different Rabbanim from the ghetto in Talmid HaChamim. Menachem Zemba wrote, Rabbi Chil Weinberg wrote also, and he sent it in. They were in touch with him. He wasn't there. He wasn't there in the ghetto. They had different, and they put out one copy of the Sefer. They were going to check it for mistakes. And then the Sefer was never printed, and the one copy was lost. And Rabbi Weinberg didn't even remember what he wrote. He just remembers that he participated. That was they wanted to be mechazek themselves in the hope that they may have a Yeshua So they put out a sefer in the Warsaw ghetto, right before they were all killed by the Nazis. That was unbelievable. There was a difference of opinion whether the Rabbi Nachman Zemba approved of the uprising or not. So one of the writers, Friedenson, always used to write that he was not in favor of the uprising. You're gonna rebel against the Nazis, and they're just gonna kill you earlier than otherwise. And others say no, that they were there, and he did finally at the end, he did approve. He said they may as well kill some Nazis. They're all gonna lose their lives anyway. So let's try to kill a few Nazis, so there'll be less murderers in the world. That was the last Seder, the Last Supper. The difference of opinion whether Rabbi Nachum Zemba approved it or not. So apparently for a long time he did not approve. And that's what Friedenson always writes. He never approved it. Anybody who knows him would know that he never approved it. And others say no, that at the end he realized that it didn't make sense, that they should just sit there and wait for the Shlita. So they say that at the very end he changed his mind and he said they should rebel and try to at least kill some of the Nazis, so there'd be less murderers killing the Jews. But the end of the story was they killed almost everybody from the Warsaw ghetto, hardly any survivors. I think the Kozhik Glover did survive the ghetto, and then they killed him afterwards. He was one of the survivors, and they killed him afterwards. Kozhik Glover has very interesting style of tshuvas. Quite a few of the tshuvas are on topics that the common practice is like this, and it's a question of halacha, is that valid or not? So he comes to defend the Minhag HaOlam. So he, for example, he says he attended a Knesia HaGadayla of the Agudas Yisrael, and the Gerer Rebbe asked him a shayla, that by the Hasidim it's very common practice that they'll daven Mincha after the Shkia, even on Friday afternoon. So the Gerer Rebbe asked him, how are we in fulfillment of the mitzvah? All right, the daven mincha after the shkia, there's room to negotiate. Maybe it's not so bad. There's room to farafah. But where do you have your mitzvah of Tosef Shabbos? You're supposed to be mosif mechol l'akodesh. So if you're mekabel Shabbos before the shkia, then you're not allowed to daven mincha. Once you're mekabel Shabbos, it's not permissible to daven tefillas chol. And if you're not going to be in Kol Shabbos, you left the David Mincha, so it's already Ben Hashmashas. So Ben Hashmashas is Sofik Daraisa L'chumra. So where do you, how can you fulfill the mitzvah of Tosef Shabbos? So he drays and he drays. I don't think he really comes up with a valid answer. He says something. It's really very questionable. There's also another tshuva. Kohanim are in the practice of traveling by plane. So he says, how are they allowed to travel by train? If you travel far enough by plane, you're going to be directly above the cemetery. And the Tumas Ames is Ad LaRakia. It goes all the way up. So the Kohanim are, even though the Kohanim are in an airplane, which is a closed unit, should be an Ohel, should be a Chotzitz B'fnei HaTumah, but that's an Ohel Zaruk. The airplane is moving. So the roof of the airplane is an El Zarek, but it's maybe a Satuma. El Zarek is maybe a Satuma. And the floor of the airplane is not Chotzitz B'fnei HaTumah. That's a din. An El Zarek, an automobile or a bus or a plane that's moving, is maybe a Satuma. The roof is maybe a Satuma. And it's ain't a Chotzitz B'fnei HaTumah. So if a Kohen travels 1,000 miles, even 100 miles, he most probably will cross on top of a cemetery, someplace or another. He has a whole tshuva where he gives 6 different tzedakim lahakel. I thought all 6 were very weak. He was a Talmud of the Avinezer, who was a super genius. So he tries to give ingenious, he's trying to imitate the genius of the Rebbe. It falls very short from genius. But he has quite a few tshuvas where he's trying to defend the common practice. It's a different style. Other Svarim don't have, he's known for this. And he has quite a few tshuvas where he's defending the Minhag HaOlam on different things.
half of them were all sleeping, so nobody knows anything.
The other day I was speaking about Rabbi Yochai Meisels. So I mentioned that his parents named him Eliyahu after the Vilna Gaon and Chaim, after Rav Chaim Volozhin, the two great Rabbanim that whom they looked up to. Rabbi Yochai Meisels, according to the story, was 9 years old when he went to Volozhin to learn. And he got smicha supposedly at the age of 13, which was even unusual for a big Talmid Chacham. And because he spent time in Volozhin, so he was close to both Beis HaLevi, Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, and to his son, Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, who were both in Volozhin at that time. I mentioned that there are two tshuvas, one after the other. It's one long tshuva, but it's two simonim. And the tshuvas Beis HaLevi that was sent to him was a deshaila that he asked, that he disliked a certain rabbi. He thought he was arrogant or something. He told his wife that if Rabbi so-and-so shows up, don't let him in the house. And the rabbi showed up, and the husband wasn't home. So the wife was embarrassed to say, the husband left instructions, I shouldn't leave you in the house. I shouldn't let you in the house. So she let him in. She gave him some tea and cake, and he went on his way. There was no issue of Issa Yichud, because Baila Ba'ir, so the din is that there's no Issa Yichud. I says, there's no Issa Yichud if the husband is in the city. So the husband came home, and the wife told him that she violated his instructions because she was about to leave him in the house. So he was concerned, maybe that's an Issa of Saito Safik. If the husband warns the wife not to be alone with someone, Altistri, Mishploni, and later on you find out that she was together with that person, what becomes Asur al Baila? But there were no witnesses, neither at the time that the husband warned the wife, don't let Pliny in the house, nor were there witnesses on the stira, when she had this rabbi in the house, she gave him the tea and cake. So if the husband would want to go to the Beis HaMikdash to try to give a Maim HaMorim, you would have to, there are different opinions in the Gemara. The first daf in Gemara Saita, we paskin, you need two Aiden for Kinli, two Aiden for Stira if you want to give Maim HaMorim. So that's out of the question. So the question that Rabbi Yochai Meisels had was whether the need for the two Aiden for the Kinli or for the Stira, is that what we would call Aidus Lekiyam HaDovra, that if you didn't have any witnesses at all, the whole thing doesn't count, or is it only Eidus Lebira HaDover? Just that when you come to the Beis HaMikdash, they're not going to go through the whole ceremony of Maim HaMorim just on your say-so. You have to have two witnesses to say that there's grounds for the Maim HaMorim. But over here, the husband and the wife both know that he had told her not to let the rabbi in the house. And then the husband took his wife's word for it. He accepted. She said that she violated his instructions. She let the fellow in the house. So if it's only, if the whole need for the Eidus is only Levarir, Lebir HaDover, so he doesn't have, the Beis HaLevi, Netshuva doesn't have that expression. That Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, his son, coined that expression. Eidus Lekiyam HaDover, Eidus Lebir HaDover. In yeshivas today, everybody uses those expressions. Rabbi Chaim is very good at coining phrases, formulating terminology. Beis HaLevi, each one takes them a whole three lines to explain. Eidus Lekiyam HaDover takes three lines. Eidus Lebir HaDover takes three lines. So the Beis HaLevi has a long two simonim, one after the other in the Sefer. And he comes to the conclusion that the Eidim needed for the Kinui are the Kiyam HaDover. It's not considered warning the wife unless it's in the presence of witnesses. Eidus on the Stira, that's Lebir HaDover. In this case, since there were no Eidim at the time that the husband told the wife don't let Pliny into the house, so there's no issue. Even though the husband and the wife both know that he told them not to let this person in, it doesn't count. Then in the concluding paragraph of the second simon, so the Beis HaLevi writes the real answer to the Shaila, that the Medva Mamurim, when do you have the whole Parsha of Saita? If the husband is suspicious of the wife, he thinks that she's not being faithful to him. But over here, the husband didn't like the other rabbi. So he said, if he comes to town, don't let him in the house, I don't like him. It's not that he was suspicious of his wife that she's going to be sitting with him. He had no chashad on his life. So that's in the final paragraph. The writer has nothing to discuss here. So that tshuva, the Beis Halevi doesn't write who the tshuva satu. That's the Soloveitchik tradition has it, that tshuva was written to Abel Yechaim Meisel. That I mentioned also, Abel Yechaim Meisel was a misnagid. He learned in Balozhin. They were all strong misnagdim. So the misnagdim used ksav Beis Yosef. When you write a sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzah, they use the script of the Rabbi Yosef Karo, ksav Beis Yosef. And the Hasidim adopted ksav Ari. The Arizal has slight shinuim in the Tzuras Oesias of the alphabet. So one of the shinuim that's more noticeable than the others, one is the Ches, how do you make a Ches? And one is how do you make a Tzadik? So the Ksav Beis Yosef has the two heads on top of the Tzadik, are both facing the same direction, facing forward. In Hebrew you write from right to left. So they're both facing the left, going forward. And in the Ksav Arizal, the two heads are facing opposite directions. The right head faces the right, and the left head on top of the Tzadik faces the left, opposite directions. So the many Poskim assume that according to those who use Ksav Beis Yosef, this would be Makabidi Evet. If he wrote a Tzadik and the two heads were in opposite direction, if you ever saw the NCSY emblem, it's a big Tzadik that's a Ksav Ari, not a Ksav Beis Yosef. I don't know why they adopted the Ksav Ari for the NCSY. So Abel Yechaim Meisel was the Rav here in Lodz for many years, I think, over 35 years. And he had a Sefer change all the Tzaddiks in the Sefer Torah. He felt that the Sefer Torah is possible unless it corrects the Tzaddik, and you shouldn't learn from such a Sefer Torah. And Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was also friendly with him. At the same time, he learned the Balozhin. I think he was the same age as the Beis Halevi, but Rav Chaim was a little child when he learned the Balozhin. So Rav Chaim was of the opinion that the Tzuras HaOis of the Tzadik is not the Akeh B'dieved. Whether you write it like this or like that, it'll be Kosher B'dieved either way. That's a question. There's a long section in the Mishnah Berurah at the end of Siman Lamed Beis. He discusses every letter, Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Lamed, etc. Every letter, what if there was a slight shinui in the Tzuras HaOis and the Sefer Torah, or the Tefillin, Siman Lamed Beis, Hilchos Tefillin, when is it possible B'dieved and when not? That's what we mentioned yesterday. Then I mentioned Abel Yechaim Meisel had a grandson who was also a Rav, who also was Rav in Lodz. And then, at the end of his Rabbanus in Lodz, right before the war, he moved to Warsaw, and all the big, the uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto was on Pesach. So the Last Supper was the Korban Pesach, when all the Rabbanim ate by his home, ate by the grandson of Rav Meisel. They all probably said, including Rav Menachem Zemba, they all had to say that by Rabbi Meisel, the grandson, who had moved to the Warsaw Ghetto.